Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
A moment of silence for all the mothers out there.
We love you, moms. All right, we should probably get started.
Moms are the biggest supporter of Kino Clash. So this episode is sponsored by them. Moms.
Sponsored by the sitcom Moms, okay. By Chuck Lorre, starring Anna Faris and...
Hey, Brendan, I don't want to, you know, like, come after you or anything, but I do recall in Indiana Jones versus Akira, there was a promise made that no one was ever allowed to bring up Chuck Lorre on this podcast ever
no,
again.
No. The promise was that you wouldn't do it.
So everybody else gets to be making Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men jokes,
well,
and I'm forbidden.
Kyle, think about it like this. For everybody else, it's a joke. For you, you're just talking about a show you like. Yeah. I mean, we can all look at your HBO Max like homepage, and there's so much young Sheldon on there.
It's
practically blinding.
It's the number one CBS sitcom on CBS right now, so who's laughing?
I'm laughing because it's a very funny show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Kino Clash, episode 17. We're on the downhill roll now. Isn't that crazy? We've hit the crest, the midpoint of the season, and now we're on our way down.
It's kind of crazy.
We're talking about, it's wild. We're talking about The Incredibles from 2004, and we're talking about Children of Men from 2006. We're going to start with The Incredibles, which is Alex's movie.
It's a 13
Alex,
seed.
That's me.
13 seed The Incredibles versus 4 seed Children of Men.
Just like you said. Alex, you want to hit us with a little description of The Incredibles?
Yep. So The Incredibles is a Disney Pixar movie directed by Brad Bird
ourselves?
Of Ratatouille. Oh, probably.
Yeah, we should probably introduce ourselves. You know, for any new Kino Clashers coming in.
Well, that was Alex.
Yeah.
This person who's currently talking is Brendan.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Pope John Paul VII. And welcome.
Nice of you to join us today, John.
Well, now that we've got that out of the way. The Incredibles, directed by Brad Bird. So
that's the director of Tomorrowland, if I'm not mistaken.
That's good. That's good stuff.
Arguably killed the third Tron movie, right, Brendan?
Pretty definitively. What? It's not even on Disney Plus, right, Kyle?
Yeah, no, I just watched Tomorrowland this weekend because I saw it at Brendan's house when I was down there at the Best Western off 75, for those of you new Kino Clashers who don't know. On my way home, I was like, oh, wait, I didn't need to borrow the DVD. It's going to be on Disney Plus. And Disney hates that movie so much that it is not on Disney Plus.
What was your urge to watch Tomorrowland, Kyle?
I wanted to watch it for a while. I love Hugh Laurie. I love George Clooney. I love
Oprah.
The future. Oprah. She's not in it, but I mean, if we're just
Oprah,
things.
Oprah's not in it.
Oh, I'm thinking of Cloud Atlas, aren't I?
I don't think
no,
Oprah's
you're thinking
in Cloud
of
Atlas.
A Wrinkle in Time.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm almost positive about that, Cloud Atlas.
Though there is something really funny about watching Cloud Atlas and thinking that Oprah's going to show up eventually, because that movie constantly introduces like new actors.
All right. I think that's enough derailing. We could probably...
Yeah.
So, behind Tomorrowland, Brad Bird's second best movie is The Incredibles, and IMDb has it at, while trying to leave a quiet suburban life, a family of undercover superheroes are forced into action to save the world. Very short and sweet, to the point. Yeah. No fat.
Kind of like,
yeah, so,
goes right over all the politics of the world.
And the social inequality commentary.
Yeah.
So, who wants to kick us off? I'll go last.
I'll go first, and then we'll just move in the order that all of our lovely portraits are in. I really like this movie. I really liked it when I was a kid watching this movie when it came out. And I still like this movie. I think that the strong points of this film are probably the aesthetic that's like clearly inspired by a very specific era of superhero comics and cartoons mixed with, a really strong score that has a lot of, I don't know, catchy little motifs and stuff like that in it. Like the Incredibles theme, like the like brassy horns and stuff is very good. As far as the story is concerned, it's fun. It's got a lot of reincorporation, which is always enjoyable. But overall, I don't find it to be the most, I don't find it the most interesting or entertaining thing. Alex, you said as a joke, the social inequality. But the fact that there is like this social inequality for superpowered people is really funny. And I hope that its entire point was to be played as the joke that it is. But if there is even a part that feels like it's like a little bit too like genuine, it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't really like Dash with his like complaint that he can't run in races because he's abnormally fast is like a funny joke, but I don't know. I hope that wasn't trying to be anything.
I think it's all played as but a other joke. Than I don't that. Think they're trying to take that seriously. Brendan, what is your favorite Pixar movie?
My favorite Pixar movie?
Can I take a guess?
Sure.
See, I was gonna say Wall-E, but now I'm thinking about it and I think you probably dislike Wall-E.
I don't mind Wall-E. I just had to watch it a lot in college. Mm-hmm. Because, like, every intro to film class has you watch, like, Wall-E, The Artist, Get Out, and Citizen Kane. So, I just watched it too much. I would honestly probably say that this is my favorite. Because it has the most things that I like. Scratch that. If I'm talking about old Pixar stuff, this. But I recently watched Seeing Red with my Turning girlfriend. Red.
Yeah,
Turning really Red, whatever. And I really enjoyed that. So it felt like a very personal movie. So I did very much enjoy this. This feels less personal. I don't think Brad Bird really has a personal connection to The Incredibles too much, outside of just being a fan of this kind of content, which I am as well. It's whatever. I have very medium thoughts on this.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of in the same boat. This was, if not the top, this is definitely one of the top Pixar movies when I was a kid. But this kind of had a reverse Ratatouille on me. I definitely thought it was good, but it did not engage me in the way it did when I was a kid. The music is really the only thing I thought was like excellent. Everything else was just kind of beats I've seen before. The aesthetic was nice, but again, something I've seen before. So it was a nice, tight little package. It flowed well, and
TM.
it was certainly competent, but it really never wowed me outside of the music, and that's really all I have to say. It didn't hold up as much as it did, or as much as Ratatouille did, at least for me, having not seen this in probably 10 years. So, yeah, it was good, but didn't exceed my expectations or anything.
I had very much the opposite reaction to Ryan. This was one of the Pixar movies that I did not watch a lot as a kid. I don't know why. I mean, it's not like I disliked it or my folks disliked it. But no, I haven't seen this movie in legitimately probably since I before middle school, if I'm being honest. So getting to go back and rewatch it, I really, really enjoyed it. Like, I would say this is easily one of my second favorite Pixar movie now. Top three for sure. Everything you guys said, the score is really fun. It's just a really fun story. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I really, I don't have, it's kind of, The only problem with it is, you know, it is a Pixar movie. It just doesn't have that much depth at the end of the day. But that being said, my take is the same as Ratatouille. I mean, this is, to me, this is the peak of what you can do with children's entertainment. So
you're saying that with Paddington on your list.
Well, see, say, so, yeah, so on your list, I don't say and with, like, that the Beatles with, like, some
better
are,
children's content coming down the pipeline.
I don't say that the Beatles are the peak, because the Beatles are beyond that. They're in a god tier. They, you know, we can only strive to emulate them, and that is what Paddington 2 is in this category.
Okay,
yeah,
making sure we just clarified that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, obviously, my viewpoint aligns more with Kyle. I love this movie to death. It is such a, it's just such a fun movie through and through. I love all the characters. I think they're so entertaining and unique and fun, and everyone gets a moment to shine in this movie, including Jack-Jack. The music is kick-ass and just gets you going for this fun little superhero romp that doesn't take itself too seriously, but still, like, has the time to do some clever, fun, unique stuff with this genre. I think it's the best Fantastic Four movie that we're probably ever gonna get. It's just, I think animation, side tangent with the Fantastic Four stuff, I think animation is kind of where that superhero team up should live, and I think that's why The Incredibles works so well, because if you kind of make that team up too real, it just comes off as silly. Versus this movie just pulls it off.
I can't believe you'd say that about Michael Chiklis in an orange foam suit. That's so insulting to the performance he gives when he tries to pick up that little ring that doesn't fit in his hand.
Scrapes on the concrete. but yeah, no, this movie is just such a fun romp, and it's such a brisk, what is it, like hour 40 that just goes by so quickly, and I'm engaged throughout the entire movie. And it's also one of those movies that I watched so much as a kid that you just, it's infinitely quotable, and the dialogue almost comes off as like sing-songy. So like I can just quote the whole beginning little newsreel of them as Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible just kind of talking to the interview or whatever. Just there's so many moments throughout this movie that are so ingrained in my brain, and that obviously has something to do with my enjoyment of this movie. But no, I love it to death. It is such a, I think it's personally the best Pixar movie that's ever been out, because it has those moments of like kind of going a little deeper, but like not too hammy with it. And it's just such a there's so many moments that as an adult you'll catch that just make you laugh way harder than like the poo-poo jokes that Jack-Jack has as you watched as a kid. So I think it's the most accessible movie that Pixar has. To all audiences.
Well, honestly, I was going to say, like, jumping off that, talking about the opening of the movie, this movie has a lot of qualities that, you know, kind of make it a very clear parody of at least, like, the concept of superheroes, if it's not parodying anything in particular. I really enjoyed those moments. Sometimes they're a little bit like silly, like when he's in the courtroom, there's a picture of him in the courtroom, like, yeah, I saved your life. I find that like, that's a little bit much because it's really silly. but I really love a lot of the parody stuff. Like when it's him and Frozone in the car, and it's clear that Frozone has heard, what is his name? Paul?
Craig T.
Mr. Incredible's name? Well, I know it's Craig T. Nelson, but what's the character's name?
Bob Parr?
Something like that. Yeah, Bob Parr. That Parr made me think of Paul. Yeah, it's clear that he's heard Bob tell this same story over and over and over and over and over again. He's just like, and I caught, you know, he was monologuing. I caught a monologue. And it's just like, I don't know, there's something that's really funny to me about that.
Yeah, there were a few jokes that they snuck in there. Particularly at the insurance firm, that are just like, I mean, there's children do not have any concept of how monotonous a job in a cube working for an insurance firm would be. And so you get a lot of those kind of Office Space-esque jokes there.
I also that, like that how I awful appreciated. They show that the insurance company is. Like, that's something I did not remember as a kid.
Yeah, it was basically like he was trying to get her money and like tell her the best way to go about doing that. And he's like, "You told her all the loopholes." it's really funny. And that, like, I don't know. You think that guy's voice is funny when you're a kid, and that's all you really get out of it. So there were definitely jokes.
Not happy,
like that.
Bob.
Not yeah,
happy.
There are definitely jokes. Landed for me.
Yeah, I also really love Craig T. Nelson's performance in this movie. There's a lot of moments where he's like really like. You got to do this, and you got to do that now, and we got to do it like that.
Super
that's just
emotive.
Really
I think the whole cast is super emotive.
Yeah,
he's
well, besides
he
like
just
violent.
Sounds
but...
so he sounds so desperate, like 90% of the movie, and it's so funny for me.
Mm-hmm.
Who voices yeah, Mrs. Definitely. Incredible? I can never remember her name. It's
Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter, yeah,
yeah. Famous for drinking grandma's peach tea on the Senate board of. Whatever.
Back on the Snyder counter, baby. We're back on the Snyder counter. Watch out, ladies and gentlemen.
Ding, one more.
Yeah, I would say the vocal performances have a lot of life. But yeah, I don't know. But so I guess those are some other things, like kind of the grown up jokes and the vocal performances and the music. I mean, what other things really stand out to you guys as being excellent in this movie? Because the animation in particular, I mean, I thought Finding Nemo looked better. I mean, I thought
I will.
Pixar
that was the
better.
Weakest part for me was this was like the first Pixar movie I've watched in a while where I was like, this animation is it's not that it even hasn't aged well. It's just weak compared to.
Yeah, it stylistically things. Outside of the, I guess, 70s aesthetic. It got that and it got the colors right, but I don't know. Everything just looked, I don't know, but not cheap necessarily, but just kind of lifeless.
Yeah, the animation works best when it's like small little set pieces, but when you have like a sweeping cityscape where it just looks really barren and very like PlayStation 2 Spider-Man, that's where it kind of falls apart.
That was a big thing for me was that final fight scene. There's nobody in the streets and there's like no damage to the buildings or anything. It's just them running around. With a giant bowling ball after him. It's effective because it focuses on the action within the family, but you also don't get any sort of scale or like feeling for how people are reacting. People just come out and start like, hey! It's like, oh, where were you guys?
Good job. Good job, the Incredibles.
Yeah. So I don't know. Little things like that with the animation in particular kind of stick out to me.
I think that the montage of Bob getting fit has some good like shots in it, like when he's lifting
I'm
the
actually
train cars
a huge
and stuff.
Fan mm-hmm. of that montage.
Yeah, I think that has a lot of creative moments. I think there's like every once in a while you get a shot that's really creative, and then it goes into kind of a more bland either action scene or set piece. Like when they're in that burning building. It's really fun when they're like essentially running through the entire building and then busting into the diamond store, jewelry store. I don't know why I said diamond specifically, but you know. But then everything after that's pretty bland. Like even with him freezing the guy.
Oh, are you serious? I love like, the I know freeze. I mean, because they just established that he needs like there is no water in the air in the burning building, and so. Him drinking the water. I thought that was like so fun and clever.
No. I think it's hilarious. I just don't think like it's not as visually fun as them running through whole building because they have nothing else to do. You know, and I feel like the movie kind of has those like gets really, really cool creatively, and then it kind of goes back down to just being okay. And the stuff that's okay is usually made up for by being funny. But like even in the airplane. When they're in that, when they crash an airplane like halfway through the movie, which I forgot about when I was rewatching, I was like, "Oh shit, I forgot that there's like a plane crash."
Well,
it's
not a plane crash; it's gets shot down.
Well, the plane crashes.
No, it doesn't. It's exploding.
Is my point. I mean that there's plane trouble. I guess
there's what?
Plane trouble. There's a part in the movie that you can't put in like an airplane version of the film.
See, for me,
like with the Delta would cut it out.
What I love about this movie, and what I was saying is the best Fantastic Four movie, is that specifically that plane scene. I really like it. For some reason, it's one of the more memorable parts of the movie. I think about that and how fun and cool it is. But I love what they do with this movie, all the characters, and that they team them up and use their powers in really fun, creative ways. Like, I think almost every team up that you could make with these four characters occurs in the movie, and like something cool happens with it. So like, after the plane crash, Elastigirl turns into a boat. Dash uses his feet as rudders. Later on, we have Dash inside of the Violet's force field as like a hamster ball, and like they just kind of like do fun team, or like Mr. Incredible throwing Elastigirl. I just think all the fun team ups and like cool like combinations of the powers elevates it for me, because it really just shows like this is like a family, you know. Like, it drives home the message of we got to work together as a family, and showing that visually in their actual like powers, I think was a strong suit for me.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. No, that's that was my point with the airplane thing, where there's like a lot of parts of that just feel like, yeah, this is an action movie. I've seen a plane crash. I've seen Amazing Spider-Man 2. I know how that movie starts. Which, by the way,
that's a bad just plane a crash that, example.
Isn't that the wildest thing that movie starts with a plane crash? But you know, like that seems pretty like whatever. But then you know, using the powers after the plane explodes is so interesting. Like going from, you know, parachute to boat, and then you know, even on the shore, how they you know, you even see like what's her face, Violet, messing around with the fire with her. You know, there's like fun little like moments like that I find to be more creatively enjoyable than like the more schlocky like action movie stuff mm-hmm. that the movie does.
Yeah, there were that. I agree with you, Alex. The family team up stuff, it really broke the monotony of the family drama element, because I don't know, that was another thing I was not a fan of. It just kind of followed a lot of beats. Like, you always knew exactly where the story was going, especially in the family drama elements. And those team-up moments are really what made it shine, because it actually brought use out of the animation. And I think it shows its moments to use those as well. But, yeah, going back to the mundane kind of family stuff, I think it would have been more interesting, and I think I've even heard in, like, interviews they were thinking of leaning more into... the mom kind of investigating Bob's infidelity or presumed infidelity. And I think that would have been a really interesting angle, because as it is, it plays out like any kind of Disney Channel family drama kind of episode or any other family movie. So it really didn't do much for me outside of those moments where they teamed up and were actually using their powers. It just seemed like kind of a slog to get to those moments, or not a slog even, yeah, just so much as I know exactly where this is going.
Well, and I feel like the payoff with the villain isn't even that, like,
yeah,
isn't even that fun.
I remember like, his plot being completely different than what it was. Like,
his plot is stupid as hell. Yeah.
No, I remembered his
plot. He's like, plot I'm going to give away superpowers to people.
Being the one throwaway. Yeah, exactly. I remembered it being the one throwaway line. Like, that was his whole thing, was like, I'm going to make everybody a superhero. But no, his thing is just... He's like, yeah, I want to be a superhero, and I'm killing all the other superheroes so I can be a superhero. And I was like, that's not as fun as how I remembered it, but, you know. Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I liked Syndrome and his whole thing, and just his whole master plan, because I was like, oh, like, you know, in this cartoon fantasy supervillain exaggeration kind of world we live in, I feel like that's exactly what you would do to be the superhero, and, like, you know, you perfect your machine by using all the other existing superheroes as guinea pigs, and then you're the one with the device that controls it and makes you look like the best superhero.
Yeah, but and even then, like, there's so much effort gone into that, like, testing it against other superheroes that is, like, you know, ultimately, it was illegal for them to be superheroes anyway. You know, so it's like, I don't know. They might not have done anything about this thing if you just dropped it in a city. You could have shown up and, like, punched an arm off of it.
Whatever. I don't know if I'd be buying on that, but
Well, I just mean, like, it's so much effort for something that was still illegal. Like,
right, but to drop a super weapon into a city where the only answer is to have a superhero, and then he'd be cheered on. I mean, it's the whole thing of, like, when he was Buddy, and he was, what was it, Incrediboy? Just, like, that whole traumatic experience of him wanting to have attention and never getting it. Like, I feel like the natural progression in that is he's going to become this supervillain that he only cares about being seen as the only capable superhero.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the boat of, he's not a particularly compelling villain for me. The thing I did find interesting was that when they replayed the scene of Mr. Incredible with Bon Voyage, and he's like, "Go home, buddy. I work alone." It's much softer in that opening shot at the beginning of the movie. He's saying it in a way like, "Go home, like you shouldn't be here." But when they flash forward in the future and they go back to that moment, it's like, "I work alone." It's much darker from his point of view. So I thought that was kind of interesting. He kind of perceived it much differently than how it was shown. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but a very fine part of the performance that, I don't know, nothing else really stuck out to me with his character in particular. I also didn't really like the character design of Syndrome. I thought he was a little goofy looking.
I thought he looked goofy. I also, like, I really
do. Do you guys
like
think Jimmy Neutron looks goofy?
A very different tone it's going for. I don't know. I'd say they're equally silly. I don't know.
A little Johnny Bravo-esque, and then Jimmy Neutron.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like, I like the idea. Like, I like how the whole cape thing comes back and how Syndrome dies. I think that's funny, but I'm also like, man, I wish there was more resolution to that character than what we got, because frankly, there's just so much with that character that is kind of just thrown
he
at you.
Fails instantly that, like, against his own robot. Yeah. And then he disappears for the rest of the fight. I think it would have been a far more interesting kind of final conclusion if he was actively trying to stop them or something, or trying to get his wrist command thing back. I don't know, just something. He just kind of shows up with their baby and then gets sucked into an airplane.
He gets knocked the fuck out. Yeah. In like the first 10 minutes of the fight, and then he's gone
until the very end
of the movie. Where they're...
No, not first yeah, it was, minute of the fight.
It was like his first action was punching off the arm. His second action was getting knocked out. And yeah. His third action was stealing a baby like 15 minutes later. So, yeah, I think I'd agree.
I had
a lot of conclusion
for
that.
I wish they had
character.
Done more with his character at the end. I think that's probably the weakest point for me.
But
no satisfying payoff.
Well, yeah. Also, it's like really weird to me that I don't know. Like, I get why he'd be like, "All right, Bob, you're gonna watch your city crumble." But outside of them just wanting to be superheroes, I also don't get a lot of like love for the city, because the city's so bland. Like, I mean, when you're watching like a Batman movie or something, it's like you get a lot of you get a big feel for the city. Mm-hmm. And you go, yeah, I could see why someone would give a shit about protecting this like Tim Burton hellscape.
Oh, see, now that's yeah, because I would say that's the part of the movie I really like, is I don't think Bob cares about protecting people so much as he cares about being the person who protects people. Like, and that's a part I really like about the movie, is that it's this guy's whole thing, and he's like, yeah, no, I'm just craving it. I gotta get back out there. And, like, he wants to be the hero. So, like, yeah, I
yeah,
would say...
And that was a,
yeah.
That was a big part of his arc, was coming to, like, he's in the real world, and he's nobody. He's just this gigantic guy at this tiny desk in a farm of cubes, and the whole movie is him coming to terms with the fact that he can kind of reach out and have a family and be more than Mr. Incredible. And I thought that was portrayed pretty well, but
oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah, I didn't,
I just mean that
I don't care about,
like,
the city either, you know, like,
well, but that's kind of my problem, is that any non superpowered human outside of the guy who runs the like relocation board of the FBI is like a jackass. So like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I would at least like to see why. Like I'm pretty sure Violet has the most positive interaction with a normal human in that she just has a crush on somebody. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has like antagonistic relationships with regular people. So it feels, I don't know, like not that they need a reason. It just, I don't know, from an audience standpoint, I would prefer that I enjoy the city more. You know, like, I don't know. It's just, there's so little at stake when they're running through the city and, like, destroying it. And I don't really care if any of the humans get hurt because it's like, they're all jackasses. Like, mm-hmm. The only interaction I have with these people from an audience standpoint is that they're mean.
Well, there's the little old lady.
Vindictive. There's a little old lady and there's that little kid and then that's
and
it.
And there's the guy who gets mugged and the other victims throughout the movie.
Silhouettes.
Yeah, the silhouettes of victims.
This is going for something different, but I think back to earlier movies like Monsters, Inc., when you get all this life on the city streets and you see all these different monsters and stuff, you really get a feel for the world they're in. This one, the world is very uninteresting and it's all about the characters. And the character moments when they get to be interesting are few and far between in my mind. So I don't know. Beats I like, but I don't know.
It feels very purposeful that they made the city super boring. Cause like the most world building you get is in the first act pretty much.
Yeah.
When, superheroes are being legalized or whatever. And so you get all the fun posters and interviews and newspaper headlines of superheroes, and that's where you kind of get a feel of like, they live among us and all that stuff, and then cut to now a super boring, bland, gray world, a world without superheroes. I think that's kind of what they're going for, like, oh look, without superheroes this is just monotonous and it's gray and it's empty and barren, which obviously is like an exaggeration because that's not what real life is, but I think that's kind of what they're going for, like, yeah, we need superheroes and we need the Incredibles.
So you're saying that they were sort of doing the same thing that Zack Snyder would eventually do with the Justice League film, where it's sort of like people lost hope without Superman.
The Incredibles walked so that Justice League
could. It gives them an ideal to strive for. And
Alex, you say, I do like that point, Alex. Because largely the purpose of the movie is to let kids know it's okay to be different. It's okay to have your own thing. And so when you suck away all these people who have extraordinary powers, the world is gray. So I don't, whether or not that's intentional, that's a very reasonable analysis of it, I would say. And it definitely plays into the motifs of the film. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. I think that I'm still in the camp of like, yeah, but like, can I see like a fruit stand or something?
Yeah.
Like, can you populate this world with things that like people use and need?
Yeah.
But at the same time, anytime you're away from the city and you're more involved with the spy superhero stuff, so like the Secret Island, Edna Mode's lair, that kind of stuff, it's all super diverse and well populated and creative, and you have the big lava door and that stuff. Like that's where the creativity shines, because it's like that's all the superhero stuff.
I would say that stuff is interesting, but it's still, like, bizarre. Like, there's still, despite how many people they have stationed on that island, like, the amount of time someone's just walking through an empty hallway is weird.
I did like that. I did like that part of the movie, how, until it was revealed who Syndrome was, how it was almost like a Bond villain kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure they took a lot of inspiration. I liked the high-tech kind of stuff mixed with the 70s aesthetic. So you're like, you're in this old-timey home kind of thing and all these matte colors and whatnot of the old days, and he just pulls out like a paper-thin tablet and stuff. I thought that was really neat. It built intrigue as to the villain. Wish it was a better villain, but I do really like the shiny white hallways they're walking through.
It would have been so much more fun if it was Syndrome's, like, dad.
You didn't let my boy play on your team.
Yeah, like something, or like he died, like sin, like Incrediboy died, and his dad was just pissed off.
My one wish is that you, my son, join Mr. Incredible. That would have been compelling, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And then, well, yeah, especially if he was like, oh, yeah, you inspired my son to do this dumb bullshit. And then you didn't you didn't even like watch over him. You just told him to go away. And then he ended up killing himself because he like his rocket boot exploded or something.
They already touched on suicide in this movie. So
it seems reasonable. Yeah, something or maybe he got hurt or something. I don't know. Like Disney's not afraid of that. They had the Black Widow kill a kid, so you know they're okay with kid murder.
Spoilers. They didn't.
Oh yeah. But yeah, you know, so like I don't know. I feel like something like that would have been more interesting, and then there would have been more baked in intrigue to that villain, and then you would have been able to show like a dude in a suit with like an eye patch.
I get, like, but also like, you know, I feel like we're really quickly drifting away from the point of the movie at this, you know, like,
well, no, then you can have like an underlying theme of fatherhood and like what does it mean to be a father, how did he you fail got too as many a themes father? Going on. how did Mr. Incredible fail to father Incrediboy? And is he doing the same thing now with his own son? Because he's kind of a shitty dad. So, like, oh, yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that you could really do. Yeah, I mean, I'm saying one change, the movie gets actual depth. And if you'd like, you can pick up my fan fiction book. It's called The Fantasticables because, you know, copyright. It's $11.99. Get it on Kindle.
It's called Incrediboy, a misunderstood hero.
Yeah. No, I appreciate what the film is and what it's going for. The only thing I think I would change is to maybe add some variation to the family drama. I thought it would have been far more interesting if Helen, the mom, was like actively investigating or something. It seems like things just kind of fell into her lap. It would have been more interesting to me to see more from her character in particular. But
yeah, she investigates for 10 minutes and then Edna Mode just goes like, oh
he's
yeah,
here. Put a tracker. Yeah. Just go to this island. He's over there.
Yeah, hit this tracker and then you're going to see, and then we're going to cut to a shot of him being suffocated by a bunch of big dodgeballs.
Yeah. I think it would have been more interesting,
That's one of those that scarred up here, baby, from being a child.
Oh,
that's
really?
A scary
absolutely.
Scene.
You know what? I bet his
face is all smushed.
Oh, yeah. I bet that was almost like a technical test for like glossy computer effects, because like those
super
sure metallic.
Kind of flexing.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on that. That's one that I don't know. I always thought that was cool as a kid. I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
it's like that's very practical.
That whole scene is super cool with him at the computer and using all the terminated superheroes. Oh,
actually, no, 100%. That was a flex because I remember watching the behind the scenes that they included with the DVD for The Incredibles, and they show you like the process of making that scene. So they were 100% flexing. Like that was something that was hard to do for sure. Because like they don't like break down a scene for no reason.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely back to what you were saying, though, Alex. Yeah, the scene with him at the computer. Really good music there, too. Really intense stuff. Yeah.
I think the music makes that scene.
Yeah.
The music makes a lot of scenes, if you ask me. I think it elevates everything it's in. This is probably my favorite Pixar score. I can't think of any I like
without
more.
A doubt.
I just wish
maybe,
it was more interesting.
Maybe Monsters, Inc. as like a
close
second.
I do like Monsters, Inc. a lot, too. Good. Yeah,
just so jovial.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the jazz is great.
One last thing to talk about, because I think we're kind of nearing the end of it. Did you guys? How'd you feel about like all the side characters, Frozone, Edna Mode? Just like even the civilians that we do come across, the teacher, the little kid, the old lady that has her cat in the tree.
The teacher and the insurance manager could have been the same fucking character for all I... Like, they're the same dude.
I disagree completely. I'm a teacher sympathizer. Teacher's being tormented by basically a god.
Yeah.
Teacher's not a bad guy. He is in the right. He is literally being tormented.
I think all of
them. I just mean how they like how the movie presents them, they might as well be the same character. No, which maybe that's
they're different.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think the non-hero characters, or the characters that aren't in any way related to heroes, I should say, because like the Relocator, Edna, Frozone, like all these people kind of build this idea of what things were like and who these people are and their kind of social dynamics. And I think that was really interesting, especially like the Relocator guy. That's something that they definitely.
Oh, I love
they
him.
Definitely didn't need to have that. But it's something that just kind of like, oh, well, how would this be handled? And he's like, eh, you got to move around, change your name, find a new house, that kind of thing. It's really subtle. But it plays out really well, and it doesn't ruin the pacing, and it builds your idea of the world they're living in. So, all those characters are great. I mean, Frozone's my favorite character. I think he has by far the best design as far as the super suit and everything. And that wears my super suit is iconic. That whole sequence.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Plus Sam Jackson. Well, you gotta love him.
Yeah, you're not gonna have a movie. You're not gonna have a character played by Sam Jackson that isn't iconic in some way.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I love all those side characters.
For me, Edna, I think, is one of the most interesting. Like, legitimate, I love the idea of a superhero fashion designer, and like they all go to one person to get their suits. And also the scene when they're entering her lair, and it's the she has to do all the passwords, and then Edna Mode, and the giant gun drops down. Yeah.
And guessed.
Got a solid cackle out of me.
Yeah. That kind of goes back to the almost like a Bond homage with just this tech guy or gal in this case who just gives all the spies, in this case heroes, gives them all their wares.
Well, and I love that too because it explains why everyone kind of has a consistent style throughout all of their costumes.
She was on one when she made Frozones, though, let me tell you. That's
I mean, that's honestly, Frozone and like original and an original Mr. Incredible.
Yeah,
great looking.
That is the thing. I love that blue and black. I don't like the Incredibles red and black. So
I don't
much.
Care for the Incredibles no. costume. No, I don't care for Mr. Incredibles no. costume either. But I do like Elastigirl's
oh, really?
Costume.
Yeah, I like Elastigirl's.
Elastigirl's like is great with like the sequence,
but kind of like pearlescent crimson.
Hmm. Yeah. But are we spent? You think?
Well, I think we might need to address the elephant in the room.
Is it the dumpy?
It's the dumpy. It's a bit much. It's a bit much. Even like I don't know who was animating,
and I think,
but they were having a fun time.
I think this was during a time, early 2000s. That's when like what peak sexy was like really skinny. So, like, to have, like, a mom with a dumpy, because, like, at one point, she, like, looks at herself in the mirror, and she's, like, kind of disappointed. But fast forward 20 years, we're like, yes, more of that, please.
You don't know what you have.
I, like, you know, I've seen, like, images on Twitter and stuff, and I was like, oh, those are clearly edited. They're not. They are not edited.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing.
Absolute dump truck.
Super small waist, too.
Yeah, they were. I argue they were just way too ahead of their time.
I mean, it was very clear to me what they were doing. I mean, when you look at something like the Justice League animated series, or any of like Bruce Timm's old art, who basically his art style is essentially the art style of the Incredibles. Like, I mean, that's what all of his shit looks like for the most part. No waist, huge ass on all the women. Like, no, like...
That's because they're super.
No difference there. That's because they're super. But like, I to me, I always felt like the style of this movie was an intentional homage to that, like, art style that he kind of popularized. But,
beats me.
Yeah, so, like...
I'm going to go one step further.
I don't know if it is or not.
I think when Mrs. Incredible is stuck between all the doors, some guy had a fetish, and he was absolutely getting his rocks off.
Oh, absolutely.
The guy who poked her leg. Yeah, because no, right after that, she looks in the mirror, and she kind of looks at herself like, oh, this makes my butt look too big. Clearly, they're going for, like, this is mom body.
No, it's like 15
we'll
minutes
straight
of just like, yeah, you know.
You know, that's great. What they're talking about when they say the male gaze, you know, in cinema. Clearly right there.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, that was the only point I really needed to get across this episode. Oh, no, my only other thing is they're absolutely right to not let Dash compete in sports. That's bullshit. That's absolute hogwash.
Yeah, no.
But that's another little angle that they didn't have to touch on, but I love that they did. And then at the end, I'm like, no, slow down.
No,
second
that's what
place,
I'm saying.
Second
like,
place. I loved
he
it.
He shouldn't be. That's so shitty to every
he
other
shouldn't
kid
place.
Yeah.
Well, also, I love that the message of that movie, like, I mean, once again, it's all a joke, but like, you know, when you look at something like the old Spider-Man movies, where it's like the lesson is, yeah, you really can't do anything about your shitty situation, because if you take advantage of the fact that you have powers, then that makes you kind of a shitty person. I like how that's like hammered home in those movies, and then this one, it's like, well, just like. Get second place, like, just don't get like the
don't beat them all,
don't get the, yeah, don't get the jackpot, just go one less, like.
But yeah, no, other than that, probably hit final thoughts and then move right along, because we got a schedule to keep today.
Yeah, I'll start with my final thoughts, since I started with the original thoughts. I think this movie's a fantastic fun ride. It's certainly
it's incredible, not fantastic.
No, it's fantastic. It's
don't
fantastic.
Stop promoting your book, Brent. We get cuts here, you know.
It's fantasticable. Yeah, it's a fun ride. I think that it's one of my favorite Pixar movies, but that's also like an incredibly low bar to clear. If you want more of a visual feast, there are several more compelling selections in the Pixar library that you can pick from. But if you want something that is funny and has like a legitimately really good vocal performance, or vocal performances, this is a great choice. I wish that it wasn't marred by one of the worst sequels that has been made by anybody in the form of Incredibles 2.
I have absolutely no opinion on it, because I don't remember anything about it. And that's a problem.
Terrible, right? Like that, but that inherently makes it terrible. Like the stuff that I remember about Incredibles 2 is the stuff that they just repeated from Incredibles 1. And then the fact that
all I remember is the face off against the Underminer, because I've been waiting 15 years for that.
Yeah. And then the fact that Bob Odenkirk is in Incredibles 2. That's about it. That's all I remember. But yeah, so like, I wish that they didn't make that movie. I wish that they just left it as a perfect little thing all on its own. But, you know, shit happens when you're owned by Disney. So can't get that Tron 3, though.
Were they owned by Disney when
yeah,
the first
yeah, they've
was
been
made?
Owned by Disney since. Yeah, they've been owned by Disney since like. Since
Bugs
Monsters
Life or
Inc.
something.
Well, Bugs Life is their first.
Oh, I mean like Finding Nemo or Monsters Inc. One of those two.
I think Monsters Inc. was the last one they did on their own.
Okay, interesting.
Well, anyway, I find this movie it does have smart writing, lots of tie-ins and everything, and little payoffs here and there. Decent world building and excellent movie. But yeah, it this really didn't resonate with me as much as it did when I was a kid, and I guess that's probably normal. But after seeing Ratatouille, I thought I might get more out of this, but yeah, it was good, and I enjoyed it. But that's about as far as it goes. Maybe it's just my superhero burnout, but yeah, it didn't do a lot for me, but it's by no means bad. It has a lot of really great elements. It just didn't particularly speak to me this time.
Maybe we should have interviewed like one of those like crazy ass Disney adults and asked them like, hey, how is this evergreen for you? Talk to me about how this is evergreen to you.
I don't want to do that. Yeah,
just stand outside of Disney World and just round them up.
You can do that. You can do that. You can do it as promotion for your Fantasticables book.
Wouldn't you like this more if it had a catchier name?
It'd be like the Arrested Development storyline in season 4 where you're like towing the line of trademark infringement
for
Fantastic Four. Sir, we're going to have to ask you to stop this immediately. I don't have too much to say. I will say, upon reflection in this conversation, I think it's easily the funniest Pixar movie in my mind. Because, like, looking back on it, yeah, I was laughing out loud during this. And most of the time, it's normally just a sly smirk and a, you go get him, Brad. But this time there were some good jokes. I'm really glad we got to revisit this. I'm really sad that these Pixar matchups are so goddamn brutal. and we're about to get into Children of Men. But I'm super happy I got to rewatch this. And I love Pixar. I think they do incredible work. So, yeah.
Yeah, I get the sense, Brendan and Ryan, you're not huge Pixar fans, but I love Pixar too. I love almost everything they make. And I think this is probably my favorite Pixar movie. It is just, it's so fun. What about The Good Dinosaur? Haven't seen it.
Yeah. Oh, well then, how big of a Pixar fan can you be? Really, I've seen The Good Dinosaur.
It's only The Good Dinosaur and Monsters University and Toy Story 4 are the only ones I haven't seen.
Toy Story 4 is legitimately fantastic. You actually should see that.
Well, I was going to watch it. I was rewatching the other Toy Stories, and I got up to 2, and then I never got around to watching 3, but I need to watch it to watch 4.
See, I did not like 3, so I was like, you're not going to get my money again, Disney. You're not going to trick me again.
Brendan, 4 is legitimately up your alley. Like, there are some
fantastic
jokes. All right.
I'll never watch it.
I swear by it.
Brendan, it has a talking spork.
It could have a fucking talking Tron action figure. I still wouldn't watch it.
Oh my god, in Puerto Rico, I found a Tron action figure, and I was so close to buying it for you, but I was in a busy line. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It was in a CVS. Or a Walgreens.
Was it a Puerto Rican Tron, or was it officially licensed?
No, I think it was official. It had the Disney logo on it, so I thought it was officially licensed.
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe that's where I have to go now with my people.
Oh, Walgreens in San Juan. Anyway, yeah. Peak Pixar. Love it to death. Amazing score in both like the dramatic moments and the fun action moments. The characters are awesome. I love all the voice actors. I love all the arcs. I love all the side characters. I think the side characters stand out the most in this movie than any other Pixar movie. Even the non-superhero ones. I crack up at the teacher scene. Or, coincidence? I think not. I love that. It's hilarious. And I think the action scenes are also super cool. Minus the last one, because the city is a little barren. But I think also the point is kind of like, oh, this is their playground. It's just time to throw around a bowling ball through some buildings. But the action scene through the island with Dash running on the water, I think it's so cool. And just all around. This movie is so fun. And so I think it's exactly what a superhero movie should be. And it doesn't take itself seriously whatsoever. And it kind of thrives on that because it's able to make some really fun jokes. And like Mr. Incredible getting a cat out of a tree by uprooting the entire tree and just shaking it. Like, that's funny. It's good stuff. But, yeah, I love The Incredibles.
Didn't mention it. I love that robot, too. Like, that thing is legitimately, like, quite the beast.
Yeah, it's cool.
Not the beast, of course. but...
that's copyrighted for yours truly. Oh, one last thing about the jokes. The one that made me laugh out loud the hardest was the first time Mr. Incredible's fighting the big bowling ball robot, and he pulls something in his back, and then when the robot's blowing him apart and it cracks, oh, that gets me every single time. But yeah,
wish someone would do that to me. Just pull me, fix all my back problems in one.
It looks
in
good.
One motion.
But with that, on to 2006's Children of Men.
Yeah, let's do it. All right. And welcome back, everybody. We're going to be continuing this episode with the 2006 movie Children of Men. Letterboxd says, "The future is a thing of the past. In 2027, in a chaotic world in which humans can no longer procreate, a former activist agrees to help transport a miraculously pregnant woman to a sanctuary at sea, where her child's birth may help scientists save the future of humankind." And I think this is one of the rare ones where only the person who suggested the movie had seen it. It was new for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
sir?
I've shown this movie to a handful of people, and they all really enjoyed it. And this was a movie we all got to experience together on on my little trip. So we had a Kino Clash live viewing, and it was quite pleasant.
Live from the Hampton Inn off of 75.
Yeah, when Ryan was running across America. Yep.
in a Forrest Gump-esque montage, I had my hat and my short shorts and my flannel shirt, and I ran to the Kino Boys, and we watched Children of Men. I guess let's kick into it. What did you guys think?
I can go again. I ended up watching this movie on my own, like alone, and then watching it again with the boys. And both times, an absolute, like, indescribable experience. I love this movie. This movie has infected me in the same way that Snatch did, except it's an actual good movie.
Snatch,
you know,
is good and dead. Okay, you do not need to attack Snatch anymore.
But yeah, like I've already bought this movie.
Oh wow, nice.
Yeah, like it is so unbelievably good. I thought that all of the themes, all of the performances, the music. Oh my god, the music is so incredible. Like this, like sort of like weird, almost like gospel sound to it, and then it like the use of the what was it, like the, I think it's called like the elegy for Hiroshima or something like that, at the end is so striking. The cinematography is unbelievable. Yeah, like the fact that this movie exists on what wasn't, like the fact that this movie exists and it wasn't the most expensive movie of the year it came out is like astounding, because this movie looks like it's worth, you know, $800 million. Like there's not a moment of this movie outside of like maybe one or two like shots that I don't buy 100% in terms of the VFX and the practical effects. And yeah, and once again, just the performances, everyone brings 110% in my opinion. And like, I don't know, like there's so many moments, especially towards the end, where you're just left completely in awe of what has to be a real horrible, like a militant uprising that's happening, even though it's clearly Clive Owen and Chiwetel Ejiofor going back and forth. Yeah.
Really makes you hold your breath in a lot of sequences.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, I loved it.
Kyle, Alex?
Oh, I was trying to point to Alex. Am I not pointing to Alex?
No. No. You're... It looks like you're pointing to your own name in the Discord.
Oh, neat.
Actually, yeah, it does.
Yeah. No, again, just for a reminder for any newcomers here, the last Pixar movie, Ratatouille, was matched up against Old Boy, which is a hyper-violent movie that deals with some very adult themes. And wouldn't you know it, it's the same in this one. So yeah, we watched this together, and it was a real nice experience. And Brendan looked over to me at one point, and I was just sitting there clutching my pearls. And
his iconic Kyle pearls, his epic 13-inch chain of pearls.
Yeah. You can find that on my personal store, by the way.
It's on the wiki. But,
yeah, I mean, this movie was incredible. Really under the radar. Like, I have never heard of anybody even talk about it, let alone anybody call it their favorite. But yeah, no, I really, for me, definitely the same. I love a one shot. I've been reflecting on it if it's going to get hacky here soon and cheesy, but as of now, I still find it a really impressive visual feat. And I really like how they used them, how it wasn't the continuous one shot, but how pretty much every major scene is a one shot. So yeah, really, like, yeah, just kind of blown away by that. I didn't pick up on the score, like, at all, actually. Can't even remember one element of it, so I'll have to watch it again and see. The acting, fantastic. And there are some truly jaw-dropping moments in it. I think my only complaint would be the symbolism can be a little clubby over the head at times, but I don't even have a problem with that. As a matter of fact, I like it. So, yeah. No, I mean, this it definitely one of my new favorites that we've watched.
Absolutely.
I have, like, the exact same viewpoints as you, Kyle. Well, starting with the music, I also didn't notice it at all, so it's definitely something I'll be looking out for on a rewatch, which will be soon, because... My girlfriend, I would say, does not really enjoy watching movies, and it's very hard to get her to watch something. But when I told her the plot of this movie, she says, "That sounds really interesting. I really want to watch it." So that's a big, those are big bounty points to this movie. but yeah, no, this movie truly is an incredible feat of filmmaking from top to bottom. It is. I was astounded. I had seen, prior to this movie, I had seen the one shot in the car where, I'm forgetting her name. Julianne Moore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that her name?
Yeah. Yes.
She gets killed. So I saw one shot, but it didn't affect me going into this movie at all because I still got a ton after rewatching now that I got to know the characters. But yeah, no, characters, great. The story was super dystopian and funky and really got you thinking, and it's a very uncomfortable story with a very uncomfortable world that it creates, but it makes the most out of it, definitely. It's definitely one of my favorite movies that we've seen so far. I still think Old Boy's up there for me, but and I think after a rewatch, I think I'm gonna have even more of an appreciation for this movie because it really is just incredible. Sorry, that's reserved for the last movie we talked about. This movie's fantastic.
Fantasticable, perhaps.
Great. I'm glad you all really enjoyed it. I kind of got that vibe, but we didn't officially sit down and talk about it. But yeah, I kind of felt like you guys enjoyed it. This is one that I think you could place this against anything, and in most cases, I feel like this would win on just the production standpoint. If you pair that with the hook that any reasonable human can understand of this dystopian world where no children can be born, the idea is so compelling of just getting a pregnant woman to safety. So that hook is understandable to anybody.
And hey, Ryan, let's take it easy with the breeder propaganda, okay, pal? Some people can't relate to that kind of understanding, you know?
Well... Yeah, I could be wrong. I guess I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be insensitive. Yeah, but anyways, the overall world building is just so great. So much of this movie's excellence is in the background of the shots that continue, and they last so long that it's so easy to get wrapped into the characters. But if you pay attention to everything, I feel this movie puts you in the shoes of somebody in that society better than nearly anything else I've seen. I love this movie, and I think it's for very good reasons. The music is something that is soft-spoken, and I'm not surprised that you guys didn't like pick up on it. And even when Brendan said it, I was like trying to think to myself, like, oh, what songs did they use? But just the kind of choral just vocalists in these really melancholy, depressing scenes. It's just like the sound of your heart, and so you don't even notice it because it's just like, I don't know, it sounds like how you feel when you're watching the movie. And I don't know, that's something that I've really just noticed about it. The music is so soft-spoken that I really enjoy it for that, actually. And in a lot of cases, I like when music elevates a scene, even when it's being obtrusive to do so. But in this case, it's the opposite, and I appreciate it all the more for it. So, yeah, I think this movie's great, and I'm ready to hear about your guys' favorite bits of it, I guess.
I actually, before we get into that, how did you come upon it, Ryan?
That's a good question.
Clive Owen handed him a copy.
Said, "Here you go, kid."
He went to a Harry Potter like megathon, and instead of Prisoner of Azkaban, they accidentally played this movie, and they were like, "Oops." Wrong Alfonso Cuarón.
There's a podcast called that I
watch. Hey, no free publicity. No free publicity. Cut that.
If anything, cut we're leeching off them because they're
that shit's not in the budget, Ryan.
But I they might have said it in passing. As far as I remember, they've never reviewed that movie, but they said it and it. They're like, yeah, the production level is great or whatever, and that really stuck with me. So I watched it, I think, on Showtime, and I watched it one time, and I was hooked, bought it immediately, and have shown probably a dozen people by now. Every time I watch it, I love it just as much as when I first did. But, yeah, that's a good question. I think that's what it is, though. I think I just heard about it on that podcast. Okay.
Because, yeah. I mean, I don't know about – had either of you two heard of it? Ever?
I had heard of it before, mainly because it comes up in like a lot of like science fiction review like articles and stuff like that, like, you know, when you're reading about like comparisons between people in a genre of writing, a lot of the times, like, you know, seminal works are thrown around, and so that I've heard about this and I knew what it was about, but I had never seen it before, and to that extent I had only seen it as like a written, like, such as in, you know, Children of Men, an adaptation of the book by P.D. James or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay.
Same. I had heard about it, just like how highly regarded the movie is, but same, never seen, besides watching that one shot, never seen it.
Yeah, Brendan, you were about to say something, I think, right?
I was going to say, since there isn't a lot of stuff to talk about as far as the music is concerned, I'll just say the one most noticeable musical moment that I feel like everyone probably picked up on, which is what I was talking about with the Hiroshima composition. But when they're at the very end of the movie, when they're leaving the tunnel, it's like the last like one shot of the movie. Mm-hmm. Of them trying to make it to the boats before the like revolutionaries find them. The second they like you see that shot from inside the tunnel and them walking up it, you hear what sounds like someone trying to break a violin, where it's like them sawing at the strings so viciously, and it's like an ear bleedingly high pitched note. And then it kind of goes into like just utter chaos in terms of an orchestration is concerned. And like, I picked up that on that immediately because I had heard that song before. It was in a lot of like music appreciation courses that I had taken, and what David Lynch uses it in the revival of Twin Peaks, I think in the like the sixth episode of that. So I was familiar with it, so I knew all the context behind it, and it is an incredibly recognizable piece if you had heard it before. But there's nothing that gives a sense of dread like that opening note of what sounds like someone trying to cut through their violin. Like, it's so affecting. And I don't know if anyone else picked up on that, but I really wanted to hammer home that. Like, a lot of the...
I'll be listening for that next time. You said that's at the very end, right?
Yeah, okay. You know that shot once we like once it's about to start like the last like long one-er,
sure, yeah.
Of them coming up from the like tunnel into like the war zone essentially as they're trying to make it to the boat station right before Chiwetel Ejiofor stops them.
Yeah, the moment where the choral music and the vocalists really hit home for me is after the scene Alex was referring to with the car chase where, spoiler alerts, very suddenly Julianne Moore's character is shot and is no longer part of the movie. Seeing that happen and just kind of being the one shot is really effective there because it really keeps you there until they finally escape. They kill police officers and escape. Very emotional stuff. And so they get away. And then, to this point, Clive Owen's character has been very somber, very controlled, I would say. But just that scene of him walking away from everybody else who's breaking down, he's walking away lighting a cigarette, and then he just collapses in anguish. And the vocalists are really just hammering home how distraught he is. It's heartbreaking. It's crushing because up to that point he's portraying himself as this untouchable guy who cares about himself and whatnot, and you see that happen, and it's such a visceral performance. It's like I said, it's heartbreaking. It really sucks watching him break down like a cigarette loosely dangling in his hands as he's just trying to hold himself together in this.
Yeah. Well, and I think that scene also, like that musical moment, like there's a lot of repeated motifs in the actual score for the movie, where I think the first track on the actual album is called Forgotten Prayer, but that like that choral music is played a lot in the movie. It's like what's played when he first sees that Ki is pregnant.
Yeah.
And like that permeates everything in the film. Like, oh my God.
It's used.
The music is good.
it's used for both crushing emotional elements and also, crushing in the same way, but in a hopeful way. Another moment when my heart is just like, I don't even know what it feels like, is when suddenly everybody realizes there's a baby in this war zone and everybody's just silent as they're walking down these staircases with soldiers and everything. And everybody just has the utmost respect and really doesn't even know how to act. It's really beautiful. And the music is the same there. Like you said, a kind of a musical motif. And yeah, that's an especially effective one when they're leaving that building and everything's silenced, and especially when it cuts back into the hyperviolence immediately after. It's like, it really builds your appreciation for those moments of tranquility leading up to that when they're just walking away and everybody wants to see them succeed.
That's pretty much I really like that scene and what it's trying to say, but that's definitely the part that I would say is a bit heavy-handed. When they're not only when they're walking the baby down and everybody's like, oh my God, it's a human life, but then how quickly conflict can start up again. Like, it's immediate. Once a rocket is, everybody blasts off again. It's like, oh, who fucking cares?
I think that the point of that was that they just wanted to make sure that they got out. I like, obviously there is some long-standing issues at play with why that conflict is even happening, because what the Fish's leader says, like, oh my, the revolution is happening and they haven't even seen the baby yet. Obviously the war that was going to happen was not going to stop forever because of the baby. Because I think it's also important to notice that the people in the building fired back at the soldiers first. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that, like, they're staring at people who are actively oppressing them. Like, like, hey, let's get this baby out of here. But I don't think that, you know, you see a guy with a tank at your doorstep, I don't think you're like, oh, yeah, maybe he'll walk away.
I could see it being heavy-handed, but at the same time, it doesn't bother me at all. It's just, I would not trade that tranquility and really effective silence with the sound for anything. That's one of the most beautiful points of the movie in my mind, and by far one of the most memorable.
I think a lesser director could have really fucked that scene up.
If Zack Snyder was if Zack Snyder was doing that,
toe that line, Brendan, toe that line.
It would have been like slow motion. One of the people would have said, "Is he Jesus?" And
it would have been that scene in Batman v Superman where everyone has their hands on Superman.
No, it wouldn't have been exactly that scene. It would have been the scene in Watchmen, the director's cut, when Night Owl saves the people out of the burning building. Because that's literally what happens. Yeah. They're like touching him like he's a god, and then one person goes, "Mama, is that Jesus?" and then it plays like.
Because I was going to say, is a part that happens in the movie, is all the people in the building who aren't fighting are reaching out to try and touch the baby.
I think that's fine.
I love just using that as a thematic little tool there in whatever kind of film. I like that part in Superman v Batman when they're all trying to reach out to Superman. I think that's a legitimately cool part.
I think that the problem that I have with that part in Batman v Superman is the fact that it's in slow motion. Because like the idea of people wanting to touch essentially a god, I mean people want to touch fucking BTS, like people want to touch people that they think are like cool. I have no problem with that. It's the fact that it took 25 minutes for the scene to end because it was playing at a 0.25 speed.
I was going to get into, as they're leaving that building and the combat resumes, the special effects in this movie are just phenomenal and really immaculate in my mind. Getting to when they're leaving the building and suddenly like all these blanks just start going off the building, and it looks so good. It looks so realistic, and I think they do a really good job of incorporating CGI and practical effects in the background. To just make every scene feel lived in, feel like it's really happening candidly. And that's persistent throughout the movie. Did you guys have... the thing that sticks out to me is really just that opening sequence of him in the coffee shop and leaving, and you see these like moving billboards on buses and everything.
Well, yeah, you see like the little tuk-tuks.
Yeah.
You know, like the little three-wheeled...
Yeah,
taxis and stuff that they have in like India. Like, oh,
you really feel like you get an idea of what this environment is. So did you guys have any moments in particular that stood out as far as the special effects were concerned?
For me, everything was essentially perfect visual effects, and the one that had just a bit of a blemish was when they're spitting the ping pong ball into his mouth. That one just looked a little wonky, but that is such an insignificant little tiny 3-second engagement that it doesn't affect the movie at all. Everything else truly is invisible CGI. And that's the best thing you can ask.
Yeah, I really liked the little small things that they did with, you know, when they're driving the cars and you have like the little heads up display. That's like just like warning them that they're getting close to something in the road, like things like that. That, I mean, we have those now. Like really, just prescient little
moments of advancement in technology that feels so real. Yeah. And then I know this isn't special effects, but probably the moment in terms of just like set direction and set design and production design that stuck with me completely was when they were at the abandoned school, when they were waiting for Sid to come pick them up. Yeah. And you're like seeing like a school that is run down for no reason other than the fact that they don't have children anymore. And you're seeing like the remains of what was there. And then you're seeing like the broken windows that like perfectly frame key on the swing set in the back. Like there's just so much work that went into making that school look abandoned, but not like destroyed. Like not that, not like someone burned it down, but just that no one had been in there in 18 years.
The deer walking by, I had forgotten about that. It's just one of those things that adds to the lived-in feel. Like it feels like a real place you could go. As with everything in this movie, I feel.
For me,
the special effects are.
You took the ball, asshole.
Is one quick statement. I would say the special effects are definitely as perfect as you can get it, and it's just the visual effects. That one ping pong scene is literally it. Everything else is absolutely perfect.
I was just going to say the special effect that really stuck out to me was how wherever Clive Owen is, he's almost always getting shot, and they're using just really good blanks of, like, seriously, wherever he is, like, you can see the mortar just spraying off wherever he is, and then, you know, finally he gets shot at the very end of the movie. But yeah.
I feel like we're completely missing something that is super impressive. The baby.
I was gonna say, yeah, the baby.
The baby was a great actor.
the birth scene. The birth scene was in like that. That was an incredible like VFX.
It was a goopy little baby.
It was a little too gray for me.
But like the like steam or like the heat coming off of the body of the baby and stuff like that, like the amount of detail in that shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the fact that that was a oneer as well is also really like too much work went into this movie.
Maybe the grossest scene in the movie. Who's to say?
Oh, that scene is really gross. So when he's washing his hands in the bucket, and you're like, "What that might have been like a fucking piss pot. Like, what are you doing?" And then he pours the whiskey on himself. But honestly, that brings into like the next thing though, which is the amount of like characterization done through stage direction and things like that, where it's like, you know, in that scene when he's about to deliver that baby, he gives up his two vices. He completely throws away his alcohol because he uses it to clean his hands, and he uses his cigarettes to pay for the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very smart and competent movie. Like, I don't feel in any moment it stumbles or forgets what it is or forgets what it's going for. Any moments of levity are really welcome because they're usually with Michael Caine or Alex, like you said, with the ping pong ball, which I would agree that doesn't look great. Like, you can obviously tell they didn't spit a ping pong ball in each other's mouths, but regardless, that brief moment of levity it builds these characters, and it lets you realize that they are thought out. They're not just always suffering kind of thing, because there would be.
Yeah. And it brings levity. And it brings a lot of legitimacy to like, that relationship between Clive Owen and Julianne Moore, because, you know, at that point, you know that they have this history and you kind of know what it is, but you don't really get the impression that they had a relationship at all when they're just kind of being cold to each other. But in that moment, it's like, oh, I see how this relationship works.
Yeah, and you see moments of their kind of pain before that, and like her saying to Clive Owens, like, it, do you know how hard it is for me to look at you? Like, you have his eyes. Just those really subtle moments where you get a lot of idea of what their past is like, and that there's a lot of love there. But I mean, losing a child is one of the hardest things that can happen to parents, and that's something that drove them apart. But you get that history without them having to give you an exposition dump or like have them constantly bickering.
Show you
or
footage.
Something. Yeah, it's like it could have been handled a lot less tasteful.
Yeah, you could have had the Alien Covenant school of, this is an iPad with a recording of me going, ha ha ha, ha, oh, I love you, I miss you, ha ha ha, ha, ha. And then it's like, oh, my husband's dead.
We're gonna need to start a counter for how many times Brendan references Alien Covenant.
I think he likes
it. There's been a few.
I unironically really enjoy that movie because it's a very pulpy horror movie. Not to talk about Alien Covenant. Also, Michael Fassbender's fantastic in it. There's a part where he kisses himself. I can't ask for much more in a film than that.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do you guys? I don't have a lot to say.
This is one of those movies that's just so good. I don't know what else to say.
I feel like Oldboy was the same. Like, we didn't have much.
I can keep going. The reincorporation of this film, like, I mean, when we're talking about them bringing up his son's eyes, the fact that then when they're being like the nurse and Key are being shown pictures of his son, they say the same thing. And even that moment where he walks in and the nurse is like, well, I feel like everything happens for a reason. He just turns around.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff like that. I'm trying to think of broad things that are persistent throughout the movie, but it's hard to talk about this movie without going into each impeccable scene. Like, every moment, I don't think I could really pick a favorite scene other than maybe when they're walking through the suddenly silent war zone. Like, everything just meshes so well together. And I think the characters are all brought to life really, really well. And I like all the styles, too. It feels just distant enough in the future that fashion might look like that, you know?
I like how every character, at least every character that's shown to be like a genuine force for good, has like that moment that sort of grounds them completely. Because like when we meet the nurse, she's kind of a ridiculous character in a way where she's, you know, she's it's hard
white
to kind of get a
and
read
has
on her.
Dreadlocks. What?
Right? What? And immediately go, I can't trust her.
Vulture. That's what I...
but like that moment in the school when they're talking and she's talking about how, you know, what life was like as it was happening, you know, being, you know, a maternity nurse, you know, and seeing like all of the appointments disappear and having that realization of like, this is something bigger than one or two miscarriages. That's like a really powerful moment. And it really tells you everything that you need to know about that character and why she is the way she is and why she believes so, completely. And what they're doing.
And if you want to do the callbacks, I really like that scene because I think it makes the scene where they're walking the baby out of the war zone all the more impactful. Because like up until then, like, you know, I hadn't really thought too much about what the effect of this is. But she's explaining like there's a whole generation of people who have never heard a child's laugh at this point. And then, yeah, when everybody hears a child crying, and, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, like, yeah, there's like no other organism that makes that noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so then everybody's like, oh, holy shit, what?
And then like even the very end of the movie where it like also like one of my favorite things in movies is a title card that just fucking punches you in the gut.
Yeah.
And this movie does that both in the beginning and at the end when you get that end title card and you just hear the children laughing. It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, it's, oh, man, that ending. Because, I mean, really, you see him get shot, but they pay almost no attention to it, Clive Owens, that is. So as it's kind of in passing, and it's one of those things where just as easily it could have just, like, shot a hole through his trench coat or something like that. But then when they're on the boat, and she's like, oh, I'm bleeding, I'm bleeding. And he's like, no, you're fine, it's me. And that's when you realize, like, he's going to die. And it that last bit, and just kind of knowing that his sacrifice wasn't in vain, I don't know. It's like it ends on a very bittersweet note, and I like a movie that does that, that doesn't make an environment like this where you can almost not even perceive a happy ending, where it gives you just a little bit. So despite his sacrifice, the laughing children kind of insinuate that they were successful in determining, you know, what happened. And yeah, it's hopeful and melancholy, and this movie does that pretty consistently.
His death is very bittersweet, but it's also very satisfying. For me, I usually don't like when the main character dies, because it's usually done just to get an emotional reaction out of you. But this movie, he accomplished his mission. Like, they did exactly what they needed to do and what he set out to do. And so him sticking around wouldn't really change the outcome of what's next, of delivering the baby. And so his death really was an emotional impact. And I wasn't left feeling like it was ham-fisted or that the story was now kind of like in desperation.
Well, and I also felt like he was cheating death the entire movie, because there's so much shit that it's like, how can he make it out?
So
like he has no right to have lived through all that he had. Like, I feel like to hit him losing that last like fight is totally fair, because it's like, I mean, he lived through more than he had any right to. Though I do think that the one thing that would have made it better is if at the very end, instead of saying what he did say, he looked her in the eyes and said, "Earn this," and then he died.
That's powerful. I was gonna say, it's funny that you mentioned that though, Brendan, that like how close to death he is, and like how I pointed out, you can always see how close bullets are to hitting him. Because one of the thoughts I had about this is, dystopian wise, a lot of the movie felt really similar to Book of Eli to me. Which is one that I was very close to putting on my list. He's always very close to death, but once he finally accomplishes his mission, he can die. I don't have much more than that.
Yeah.
But just a similar motif.
No, that was definitely the idea.
I got Book of Eli feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really everybody was sacrificed so that this baby could live. And I think that made it much more powerful. I mean, you get characters, and like you were saying, Brendan, they're all characterized very well. You feel like you get a feel for who they are. And so watching them die is really painful, and oftentimes it's just brushed away. Like the lady on the bus is, like when they're going into the prison, like city, she's just taken away. She's just gone. Like, people just kind of die. They're very fragile in this movie, and so... Yeah, I wouldn't expect any less from the main character, and it makes his death feel warranted and worthwhile. Yeah, it's very effective. I love that final bit, and I don't know. I have nothing really to say other than that I love like everything about this movie. I think it's all just super effective in what it's going for. Yeah.
Cool.
What you guys got?
I'm spent.
Spent.
Yeah. Spent.
I mean, I could keep going, but like,
I think
I'm just gonna be fucking glowing about this movie.
So high praise all around, it sounds like. I guess get into final thoughts.
I mean, yeah, I'll start off with my final thoughts. My final thoughts are much the same as my original thoughts. Movie's fucking fantastic. If you haven't seen this movie, go watch it. If you're confused as to where to watch it because it's not on any streaming services right now, rent it or buy it, because you probably won't regret it unless you really hate Clive Owen.
and even then I'll keep the order. I'm gonna have a lot more to say about this when I watch it again on my own time, because I'm not predicting how this episode is gonna go. but the first time watching this, and I don't know if you felt like this, Brendan, it was really more of an experience than anything else. Like,
no, absolutely. The second time when we watched it all together, I felt way better about being like able to talk about it, because
like,
I was able to go back and like pay attention to things that I knew I wanted to look for. But that first time, it's just like It's taking you for a ride.
Yeah, I wasn't a third party observer. I was part of Clive Owen's camp to get this pregnant lady there. So
you were the person holding the camera.
I was. So yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to watching this and getting a better breakdown of it again on my own time. But it's great. It's fantastic. Even if you really hate Clive Owens, you probably, as a general rule of thumb, if you really hate Clive Owens, you probably really like Julianne Moore. So that should balance it out in theory. we didn't even talk about Stryker and his brother.
Who now?
Stryker. The guy who plays Stryker in the X-Men movies.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name.
But, yeah, he's the perpetual bad guy. Yeah, either way. Mm-hmm. It's great. Watch Children of Men.
We didn't talk about Michael Caine either, but he's fantastic.
We did not talk about Michael Caine, who, what a performance.
This leaves everybody something to go watch the movie for then.
Michael Caine's good in
If you want a hippie Michael Caine, this is your movie. You wouldn't expect Michael Caine to...
If you were wondering what John Lennon would look like if he were still alive, go ahead and watch Children of Men.
Alex?
Yeah, I honestly have nothing else to add that we haven't already said. This movie, all around, is masterfully made, and it's... God damn it. Am I cutting out? Yeah, I'll just get my thoughts out before I lose it again. Nothing much more to add, really, than we've all already said. This movie's just masterfully made, and it's up there with one of the greatest movies to watch ever made. It's incredible. And I'm really looking forward to a rewatch on my own time because, you know, clearly we know the outcome of this. I'll go a different route than you, Kyle. We know the outcome of this, and you gotta watch it on your own. Because Ryan, you brought up a lot of like background details that just kind of continue to build the world. And I'm excited to dive into that now that I have an understanding of where the plot's going so I can focus more on the background details. But yeah, awesome. Incredible movie.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage a rewatch.
Wait, what'd you just call it?
I think he called it the Incredibles movie.
It's an awesome The Incredibles movie.
I think I pretty much mirror your guys' analyses at this point. Like, the first time I watched it, same thing. It was just purely an experience. But every rewatch, it's one of those where you can pick up something new to focus on and appreciate about it. And that's always something that I love in a movie, when you can go back and get just as good of an experience out of it. And I definitely get that through this one. We've really had nothing but praise, and I don't really have anything but praise. So I'll keep mine pretty short there, but it's a movie that speaks to me, and I think speaks to the hugest majority of people. Like I said, I've shown this to probably a dozen people by now, and they all have responded similarly. So definitely, if you have not seen it, check it out when you get the chance, because I don't think you'll be disappointed.
For sure.
If I can take a minute before voting, our good friend Christian sent me a Reddit post, and I did not come up with the term breeder propaganda. It was delivered in this post that I will now recite. So it's on r/childfree. Is Children of Men breeder propaganda? First off, I found this community a month ago and am so relieved to find a group of like-minded individuals who share my perspective. Anyway, my wife and her coworker and I all watched Children of Men last night, and I felt like I was being gaslit. It makes children out to be this incredibly important thing for society. Sure, some people need to have kids so that our species survives, but are we really going to pretend that they are not, by and large, parasites on their parents and larger community? The reason I am calling it propaganda is because my wife's coworker mentioned afterward how it really made him think about the value of kids, and my wife sort of agreed with him. We had decided long ago that we would be child-free, but this afternoon my wife texted me saying that her and her coworker were talking more about having kids, and she was upset when I told her that I had zero interest. Fuck this movie, and fuck Derek for pushing this ideology on her. So, wow. You know, kind of makes you think. Didn't really think about that aspect, though.
Yeah. You know, actually, this movie kind of sucks. When you put it like that.
Incredibles.
That was a great Hail Mary, Kyle.
I'm fighting for it, baby. Fighting for Incredibles. I say we
buck tradition. I mean, actually, Alex, we'll cut this part out. Do you want to vote first?
Yeah, please, and then I'll head out after that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll buck tradition then.
Just insert mine at the end. So I'll say, yeah, you guys all have really good opinions, and I respect all your choices, but just getting into my choices, my vote, unfortunately, is going to go to Children of Men. And honestly, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, but... I mean, you can't really go against this movie. Like, as much as I love The Incredibles, and I think it is a perfect, nearly perfect animated superhero romp, they're on two different levels, unfortunately.
It's a nearly perfect animated superhero romp directed by Brad Bird that came out in 2004. Like, there are not many in that category better than The Incredibles.
What I mean by that is that... It took that genre perfectly. It did it perfectly.
Actually, do you know what's crazy? Is that there is a better movie by Brad Bird that's a superhero animated romp, and that is, I think, Iron Giant. Like,
did Brad Bird do Iron Giant?
He did make... Yeah, he did.
Oh, wow. He did make a better one. Iron Giant's pretty fantastic.
I like Iron Giant quite a bit.
Fuck Alex.
Well, with that being said, these movies are on two different levels. Children of Men is up there with Paddington 2 in the God tier, and The Incredibles is there in the A tier. So, yeah, with that, you got a Clive Owen fan in me.
All right. Cool. Are you logging off, or are you going to stay around for a
while?
All right. Okay. Bye, Alex.
Happy Mother's Day.
Bye, Alex.
Happy Mother's Day. Well, Brendan's expecting. He really got into Children of Men after it, because it is breeder
propaganda. I did.
Breeder propaganda.
He went to Plowtown, USA to try and sustain this population. Yeah.
Well, I was sending all of those briefs to the Louisiana senators about banning contraceptives, you know, because I just feel like everyone needs to be on the same page these days.
Because, and I will remind you, Kino Clash is a Catholic podcast.
It is. We're so Catholic. People keep saying that we're not, and I...
We all have rosaries in our hands right now. all right, Ryan, I guess you're next up in the voting.
Okay. Wait, so are we putting Alex's at the end, or are we just going to leave it?
Yeah, we are. Okay. We are. So
No, he'll be at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It always goes, whosever movies it was goes first.
Okay. I'm in the same camp. This is, I think Alex put it really well. In my mind, at least, these movies are on very different levels. Children of Men is one I think is challenging, but is also one that you could show anybody and they would get it. It has a lot of really excellent filmmaking techniques and a lot of things that make it stand out. For that reason, I gotta vote for it. It really just blows me away. It's so immaculate and is pretty much the peak of film, like as far as what you can do with film. Certainly there are other things that, I don't know, maybe have more to say or, I don't know. I like this movie. It's good. You should watch it.
Big surprise. Ryan votes for his own movie.
Yeah. The Incredibles, like I said, it didn't, resonate with me the same as it did when I was a kid, which is not to say I think it's
It takes bad. Guts. It takes guts to moat against your own movie sometimes, asshole.
You know, I'll do my vote next because mine's gonna be short and sweet. Because Alex already said that he respects all of our viewpoints, I'm just gonna say I think Incredibles is the worst movie ever made. I think it's terrible. I think that the people responsible for animating it need to be prosecuted against the prosecuted on the, you know, highest court in the land, whatever that may be. And frankly, I think they should be locked away and have the key thrown away. And for that reason alone, regardless of the quality of Children of Men, I am voting for Children of Men.
Cool.
Cool. Good vote.
Yeah, well, we don't need you, Kyle, so let's wrap this.
I like Children of Men. I like The Incredibles. I'm going to vote for Children of Men.
What is this? What are we doing?
Oh, this is my new character I'm working on. It's a guy who speaks long.
Okay, all right.
The words are longer. Yeah. See my stand-up show coming here soon. Basically everything Brendan said, as a matter of fact. I was lying because I didn't want Alex to feel bad about The Incredibles.
Right.
It's awful. It's maybe the worst movie I've ever seen. I mean,
do you remember how mad he was after Ratatouille? Like, I mean... crying,
pissing, farting, all on camera.
Yeah.
That's a Kino Class loss.
He voted for Old Boy, but that was only because he wanted to save face. But no,
honestly, we gave him that ultimatum. We said, you either vote for Old Boy, or we release that footage of you pissing and crying.
Poor Alex.
So yeah, with that, I think Children of Men wins 4-0. All right. And then I got the bracket. So
okay, I think it's a 1-15.
Roll them bones.
I really didn't think Alex would vote for Children of Men. I figured he would prefer.
I figured he would.
You couldn't not vote for Children of Men. I mean,
you could. I mean, a lot of people love Incredibles. Like that's a huge fan.
Yeah, but really, it's the depth. It really is just like it's not fair that
I guess
you
that's
know.
Fair.
You know, Incredibles is perfect. Like, and it's a perfect cake that's this thick.
It's a perfect movie for people whose brains aren't fully developed. Like,
and Alex agrees with this take too. By the way, you heard him say it earlier.
Well,
he's nodding.
What
his
do
head
you?
Yes.
What is the disagreement? It's a children's movie. Children's brain. There's no child walking around with a fully developed brain, like a little Einstein or something.
That'd be pretty sick. They have a big bulging forehead with veins and wrinkles.
Yeah, yeah, like some Akira shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's. No, I don't know.
But you know what? And I bet that kid wouldn't like Incredibles more than Children of Men.
I'm not co-signing on your fully. There's plenty of merit in the Incredibles. Okay, yeah. Realistically.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing. I think I was talking about how much I like the Incredibles. I'm just saying that like it's clearly made for children. Like,
I honestly thought we might tie today.
Really?
Yeah. I was pretty sure.
What, you thought I was going to vote Incredibles?
Yeah, I thought you might.
Fair. I mean, I really did enjoy it.
You're just such a big fan of Coach and, you know, Craig T. Nelson.
I really liked the part in The Incredibles when they ask Mr. Incredible what his politics are, and he goes and says, like, well, you know, no one ever helped me when I was on food stamps. I didn't get any handouts, and that's why I'm voting for the Republican Party. Yeah. Craig T. Nelson, one of three Republicans in Hollywood.
And, you know, all employed by Disney in some form or another.
All right. Roll them bones.
All right. It is a die roll of 1 to 15. It is rolling right now. We got 8.
All right.
Ooh, I think there's a chance this could be Steve or Speed Jobs.
We are one off.
Ah, damn it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... Seven, eight. Yep, if my count's correct, it is 8 seed Princess Mononoke versus 9 seed First Man, which I think this is our first Brendan Alex matchup then.
Yeah, this is a Brendan Alex one.
Wow. Yep,
I'm seeing the same. Yeah. That's crazy. We haven't had a single one in 17 episodes now.
Yeah.
There should be more on the tail.
I mean, though, we really only have those left. Like, that's a lot of them. Yeah. Even, like, Speed Jobs, that's one of them. Like,
I think overall you two had the least matchups, though, because it's not an equal amount of matchups.
No.
What do you call it? Yeah, I haven't seen either of these.
Oh, great. Kyle, I recommend the dub for Mononoke.
Okay, dub. Good to know.
Hmm. I'll watch that, Ryan? Too, then. I've seen Princess Mononoke, but I saw it subtitled, so sure, I'll watch the dub. Because that's Ghibli, right? And they usually do a pretty good job of getting...
Was when Disney was in charge of getting the dubs and stuff together, okay. So it's like I think it's like Billy Porter and a couple other... Oh, yeah, Kyle, yeah, you have to watch the dub. It's got the guy from the first season of Fargo, the TV show.
Colin Hanks.
Billy Bob Thornton? Yeah, it's got Billy Bob Thornton in it. You have to watch the dub.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have not seen First Man, though, so.
Me neither.
Just bump the mic. What's up first?
First Man.
Oh, First Man. Oh, 8v9. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. This is, how many 8v9s we had at this point? Only one. Only Donnie Darko versus Back to the Future, and that was a very... interesting matchup. So,
yeah. Wait. Okay. Oh, and we got Magnolia Paddington 2 as one of the other 8v9s.
Yeah, that one.
And Citizen Kane Metropolis.
We were just talking about Kane Metropolis.
What a variety of those 8v9s.
I think Metropolis is going to win that.
I feel confident in Kane on that one still.
No. I mean, I really just have to win. I have to win over.
You got
to
win 75%. Alex. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. Hey, take it from me. It's hard to win 75%.
Yeah, but I feel like you'll like Metropolis, too.
Oh, I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well,
we're wrapping this up.
Episode 17. All right,
take us away.
All right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Kino Clash. Hope you enjoyed. Check out the movies and the forums. Post on the forums.
By forums
we mean the child-free subreddit, because that is the forum that we use.
In actuality, we are on Twitter, so yeah. say hi if you want.
We're not very active.
We're not. No. But we might be.
Yeah, maybe if someone spoke back.
If we weren't just launching thoughts into the void, sure, we'd tweet. But
we've also got a very out of date Letterboxd. If you wanna find us on Letterboxd,
yeah, you can comment there too.
Yeah, so. that hasn't been updated since episode 3. So find us out there, Clashers. Yep. Find us out there.
Say hi. All right. Bye, everybody. Bye-bye. So long. Till next time.
Oh, I was going to be so mad if you didn't do that.